for an informed consumer, it's hard to see. I mean, we've touched a little bit on how the evidence is there in spades that a diverse workforce leads to a more efficient company and a more profitable company. But I'm curious, with Pride at Work, you're working directly with or indirectly with folks in the workforce. What are you hearing from employees about this trend?
So from employees, certainly we hear that they are struggling more and more to get funding for their DEI initiatives, especially those that are creating more systemic change. So things like getting to a Pride Festival or forward-facing things are still more often happening. But there's still a rollback even there, is what I'm hearing from employees. And we have gotten to a place where certainly people are experiencing less discrimination at work than 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Well, more like than 10 years ago. But we are starting to see a societal backslide. And that impacts these employees in the workplace when they're seeing hate threats against community members, when they are seeing real direct hate speech on any post that their company makes regarding the community. It is concerning. I still think we made a lot of progress, and I still see progress being made, especially in industries where DEI is fairly new. So, for example, the skilled trades is an area where there has been rampant homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia, and it still exists. However, we're starting to see the first Pride ERGs in skilled trades organizations. We're seeing more and more skilled trades. Groups like Pride in Construction, Pride in Engineering, and others, we're seeing actual progress being made. And so I think as individuals, more people are comfortable standing up than ever before, but there's still covering happening for many others, and there's still a fear to be out for many others. And I don't think that that has changed. And when it comes to the Human Rights Campaign stats, I wasn't very surprised when they came out. And I would say in Canada they would be maybe slightly different, but not by a huge amount, right? And they would show that if we were looking in Canada, roughly half would have experienced some type of discrimination at work. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. But we really have to look even province by province, city by city, company by company, because certain places are more accepting than others, and that can even be within a company. Within a company, if you're at the corporate office, you're more likely to have a positive experience. And a lot of the people that I work with are the people that are working in corporate offices. The people that I'm concerned about are the frontline cashier, the person working on a pipeline, the person that is doing more of that direct labor and is in a lower paid position usually, because they're usually the ones that are experiencing the most direct discrimination at any given time. And so I think sometimes also we get into bubbles where it's like, okay, this company is so inclusive, but that's because we're only talking to the corporate office. And so there's a lot of work to do, in other words.
It's got me thinking, and this might be a little bit of a curveball, but I was wondering about why it is that LGBT folks find this as important as we do. And it makes me think about there was a shocking stat for trans folks who have the highest proportion of post-secondary education and yet the lowest employment rate, like the idea of I think that is dated and it sort of sticks in the back of my mind. But that idea of our access to workplaces, our access to employment and living wages has been historically so difficult to attain, bar a select, quite privileged few. We've got passing privilege for that effeminate men may not have, and so on and so forth. But this is something that's plagued our community for generations. Is this the first time, maybe, that we're seeing it bubble up for the youngest generations that may not have that history? I'm thinking Gen Z and maybe even millennials to a degree.
I would say for Gen Z and millennials, it's not like they haven't had experiences of discrimination, but I do think that there is less tolerance for it. Than there has been in past in that I see less so with millennials, but especially with Gen Z, a lot of the studies showcase that for Gen Zers, they are going to prioritize 2S LGBTQI plus inclusion above many other things, and that extends to the workplace. And so I see less of them being comfortable with that those forms of discrimination and just not understanding why they're happening at all. And I think though we have to be conscious of the fact, and you're referencing the TransPulse project study. That was the stats that you're referring to. And with that, they actually did some good research during COVID as well, which I would encourage looking at about the impact of COVID on trans people's healthcare and employment and economic attainment and the like. For our community, I say this as a trans person, a trans woman, a non-binary person, that we've only had legal protections in some parts of the country and in some professions since 2018. That's pretty recent when it comes down to it. And we know that legal protections only go so far. And they often support and help those who are most privileged in our communities. And I look at that fact that, for Black and Indigenous trans folks, their experiences of discrimination in the workplace are so much higher. And that isn't just racism, that isn't just transphobia, that is a combination of the two. And so I see how there can be this ongoing trend of discrimination against our communities that haven't really stopped for all of us, even if they've stopped for some of us that have more power, who are usually white, who are usually cis, who usually have higher levels of income or higher positions. Even in my own career, I've noticed how when I went to getting a director role, suddenly people respected me a lot more, and I experienced a lot less discrimination since getting director in my title. And I think that's true for a lot of other people. I'm white, I have that privilege going for me. And so I think that we need to recognize that. And there's a piece for younger generations that I think they need to access, which is more of the history. I think if there was an understanding of that, going back even into the 80s, 90s, you could still be fired for being gay in many parts of the country, at work. I think until the Rind case was successfully argued at the Supreme Court, I think if people actually heard those stories from younger generations, that there would be more of an understanding of what's happening today. Because I feel like in the 20 years that I've been out and doing queer and trans work, I have felt like we were on this upward ladder, right? And we kept climbing. We kept climbing and climbing and climbing. And now we're starting to fall backwards. And I think if we learn from previous generations, which I've had some really amazing moments with queer and trans elders that I've been very grateful for, we would do a lot better. And so, for younger generations, if you're listening, I encourage you to find an elder in the community, listen to the history, and really kind of make that connection in terms of your own career today.
I think just to circle back, I think that that's also partly why EDI is important. You know, I was familiar with an organization in Toronto, and its staffing was almost entirely white. Now, Toronto's demographics are not entirely white. Let's be honest. You know, we're not necessarily serving in the audience, serving a community, serving your customer base. If you're not able to think or reflect that customer base in any way, and I think that that's a real challenge. It's not just about having a diversity of opinions. It's about being able to bring in the best talent and not closing doors before people even get there. And I think when there's this sort of pushback against wokeness, this pushback against, I mean, the fact that EDI got villainized in the HR departments of the world is not a surprise. But I think sometimes we lose track of why we're doing these initiatives, why EDI is important. So, in your own words, why do you feel that it is important for employers to seriously take equity, diversity, and inclusion initiatives?
So there are two, I have two answers to that. So one is the employer perspective. The employer perspective is it's good business, period. It's good business for a number of reasons. You get the best talent. You are able to preemptively address things before they become human rights cases against you, and you have to rack up legal fees. You get better diversity of thought and more innovative solutions. You are seen as a thought leader and are able to enter into markets that you might not have been able to enter into before. And then there's the other answer, which is the Jade answer of it's the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. We need to have on a moral aspect to recognize that racism, homophobia, ableism, transphobia, biphobia, classism, these are all things that are societally harmful. And DEI is not perfect. It is not a be-all and end-all to create social change, but it is something that actually promotes a more inclusive society. And so I don't think that the DEI is going to save the world necessarily, but I do think it's going to make a lot of our lives a little bit better, you know? And I think that's worth going for. I think that's something that, you know, we will see that impact on, you know, communities and on historically under represented communities, equity deserving communities that have still to this day not have access to the same level of equity, the same level of wealth, the same level of income. And we need to change some of that. And DEI is a part of that process. And it's good business.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jade, so much for joining us. I did want to, we spoke just prior to the show about how there are some Canadian stats out there. So if businesses are looking to understand what the picture looks like in Canada, I think you mentioned that SRDC was looking at some Stats Canada results and put out a study as well. We'll try and get the name of it and mention it later in the show. But again, thank you so much for joining us. If anyone wants resources, go to Pride at Work Canada. I believe your email, your website is, this is where I'm
PrideAtWork.ca.
prideatwork.ca. I was quickly jumping over to the other screen to see if I could find it, but you beat me to it. Anyways, we will be back just after this. Welcome back to Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Still Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And I want to pivot just slightly to Ohio. Now, there are two pretty interesting laws being challenged in, discrimination laws being challenged in the USA. And I think in both cases, it is a straight lady, two different straight ladies, who are claiming that, I believe this is the same one. Two different cases where they're alleging discrimination.
Okay.
For essentially because they're not gay.
Okay.
So the first case is Malian Ames, who was about 20 odd years in the Ohio Department of Youth Services. Now, they had a work appraisal, and the manager was like, meets expectations, but got looked over for a promotion. In fact, the promotion went to, I think it was a gay woman. And no, it went to a gay man, and then I think some other posting came up, and that went to a gay woman. Now, apparently, these postings, one of these hires, didn't include the bare minimum qualifications. And the allegation here is that she has been looked over in favor of these gay people being hired to do the job. And therefore, surely, this is discrimination based on sexuality. Now, the company alleges, look, we wanted somebody who exceeds expectations, who takes initiatives and doesn't just meet the bare minimum, that there are other factors. Why? It's worth noting that the people that did the hiring are straight.
Okay.
It's not like a gay cartel is trying to oust this poor straight lady, but rather she lost the job twice to some gay folks. Now, this echoes another case that's making its way up to the Supreme Court. There is a judge in Minnesota that ruled that a principal who has claimed that she was discriminated against based on protected grounds of sexual orientation doesn't apply. So she says, the first lady in Ohio says, they discriminated against me because I am straight.
Mm-hmm.
This lady is saying they discriminated against me because they are homophobic.
Okay.
I also happen to be straight. So she runs a school. She did a lot of pro-gay initiatives, you know, supporting pride, you know, flags up the wazoo, you know, very, very, very pro-gay, and faced career consequences as a result of that. And is saying, look, you can't discriminate based on sexuality. This is homophobic. Mm-hmm. Now, the judge has ruled in order for it to be homophobic, you need to be a homophobe. Like that, you know what I mean?
Yes.
One has to be gay to be gay bashed, as it were.
Well, it depends on that. That depends on the legal system, though, because you hate crime laws, for example, in Canada, if somebody beats up a young man who they perceive as being effeminate and drop F-bombs as they're doing it, even if that young man is straight, by being perceived as gay, that could still have a hate motivation on it, because the crime of battery would not have happened without that perception. So it depends on the jurisdiction. In Canada, it's fine, but I don't know about the states. Every state is its own little unicorn. It's one of the strengths and also one of the profound weaknesses of the American legal system. It's a mixed bag. So I cannot comment on Minnesota, but it depends on the jurisdiction. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you're absolutely right. There's one argument. The argument in Ohio has been like, look, how does one prove that this was based on a majority being discriminated against by a minority? Mm-hmm. And then the Minnesota case, they're like, look, you're not a eligible party for this kind of lawsuit. So there's all kinds of challenges. But we won't really know now until the Supreme Court takes a look at it and creates a decision. But, Seb, you kind of beat me to the punch here. And in terms of nailing it, where these American lawsuits are looking at that workplace discrimination, I think in Canada the law works differently. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, they're often looking at the intent.
Yep.
You don't have to be gay in Canada to be the victim of a gay bashing.
Yes.
They bash you because they think you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
Issue the fault, the crime is with them and what they intended and and the hate motivation that they brought to the table. You were just the victim in this. So, yeah, you're absolutely right that in Canada, it doesn't shake out quite the same way. But there is definitely a growing legal body, a growing sort of ethical discussion happening around how to navigate equity under the law, the balance of minority and majority, and how do you make those two things work? So I just thought that was quite an interesting dichotomy of two different cases. Now, before we close out the show, we've had a chance to peruse more of Rainbow Wool. And I'm pretty sure that I will be probably sponsoring Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye.
Is a beautiful, like a nice auburn-looking sheep here. Just a beautiful, beautiful sheep. As a Welshman, I'm not going to comment on this sheep's beauty anymore. I think I've
Right. I think
taken
that's
far enough.
inappropriate to go further than that.
Exactly. But yes, I might well be here supporting and sponsoring Marvin Gaye. I just got to take a look at the paperwork. But yeah, it's been a great, great conversation. A little earlier, we heard Alien Girl by Paige Drubbo, and we will be playing out by playing out with Fences by Talinor. And I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty, who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
PFLY Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Maybe you're a parent, a family member, employer, a coworker, an educator, a healthcare provider. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.